Welcome to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational conversations about movies. Double Take is a cinema classics production hosted by Johnny DiLoretto and John DeSando. I'm John DeSando.
I'm Johnny DiLoretto. This is Double Take.
It is.
A cinema classics production. Yeah, it is. Same kind of intro, you know? Our names, the title, boom, we're in. Look,
what a time of year to be talking politics. I guess you can't avoid it, right?
Oh, my God. I wish we could avoid it.
And you were stimulated by a movie. Want to share it with us?
Yeah, this movie, when it came out, I was not really taken by it. I didn't really care about it. I haven't seen it since it came out. It's probably almost, almost 20 years old. V for Vendetta.
Oh, yeah, what a strange movie.
With Hugo Weaving and Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
And, you know, the premise is, It opens with this prologue, like a flashback to, 17th century England, and there was this guy, Guy Fawkes, F-A-W-K-E-S,
right? Right.
And he was going to blow something up because the English government was persecuting Catholics.
He didn't feel good about it.
He didn't feel good about it. His plot never took hold. It failed. But he, you know, became a symbol of revolt and standing up to...
And how famous. Even now, if you don't even know the historicity, you know the name Guy Fawkes.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is really interesting. for a guy who failed what he was trying to do. Anyway, V for Vendetta, the premise is that in the very near future, the British government has become a totalitarian nightmare. Nationalist, white nationalist, anti-gay, just like your basic sort of dystopian governmental nightmare.
Why does that sound familiar to me?
I don't know. You know, and that's what kind of struck me as I'm watching this movie, and it seems like, oh my God, like this movie is talking about the thing we're experiencing right now. And it started to feel like really bizarre. Like we might just be a few baby steps away from what this movie is showing us and how quickly you can get there. You know, it sort of runs in a little montage. They kind of show you how this came to be. And, you know, montages are usually, you know, facile ways of kind of skipping time.
Yeah, they're cheap.
Right. And in this case, I thought, wow. No, I kind of get it. And, anyway, the movie is this guy, V, wears this Guy Fawkes mask, and he's sort of like a Batman figure. You gather that he is, he's sort of, you know, really adept at fighting, but he's also very rich, and he's hidden away, and he's mounting a terrorist campaign to overthrow this government, led by John Hurt. So... You know, you got a nice, great,
good one.
You know, terrific pinnacle actor there. I'm representing the worst of humanity.
So I'd certainly like to establish my meaning for allegory. We're talking political allegory in this show.
Okay.
And an allegory is a piece of literature that has more than one level of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I could take poetry, short stories, film, whatever. There is another level of meaning. Now, some of that can be pretty close, as you were just describing.
Yeah.
Pretty close to where we are.
Because it doesn't seem, for me, it doesn't seem like allegory, right? It just seems like...
Well, it is in the sense that I can say, well, gee, that sounds like something that's happening today. Mm-hmm. And there's the allegorical part.
I got you. Okay.
All right. Well, how about my favorite of all time? Are you ready for that?
The Magnificent Seven?
Very good. Hadn't thought about it as allegory. Sometime we'll discuss that.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
The allegory of that movie.
I'm thinking 1927, Metropolis.
Okay.
Okay. So you have a fantasy, a science fiction fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
They're stamping out these powerful goddesses. Machinery is dominating the world. And the class struggle is just as powerful as it is today. So in that film, you even have a visual delineation of the upper class,
okay,
up on the top, and then the lower class below.
Right,
and the
you
lower
see
class.
Those people down under the subterranean,
yes, right,
class level.
So again, so it's a story, it's a fantasy, it's a science fiction, but it is very close to what was happening probably in the 20s and certainly what was happening now. We still have the class divide.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, allegorically, it works.
Okay.
Okay.
A movie I saw recently that seems to line up with your definition is Vivarium.
Which
is a sort of suburban nightmare.
Oh, it's great.
Horror film. So Imogene Poots and Jesse Eisenberg play this young couple. They're in the market for a house. They get taken to see a property, and it's in one of these developments, right, where all the houses look alarmingly the same.
Yes.
Suddenly things change. The movie opens with this very naturalistic kind of setting where she's a kindergarten teacher and he's a sort of laborer, and there, you know, and you get no evidence that there's
honey, let's go buy a house.
Yeah. And then suddenly the movie is in this bizarre production design world, like where everything is fake. The clouds are sort of all uniformly puffy.
Don't you
fake.
Think it starts with that salesman?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The guy is really bizarre. That should be your first.
Right. It's your first clue.
And they sort of ignore their gut instincts about this guy.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then that's the biggest mistake they make, because then they're holed up in this weird house they can't escape from. And then they're given a child. And the deal is if they raise the child, they can be free of this nightmare existence. It's just a great allegory about what we want, what our dreams are, what the American dream is, how young people perceive child rearing.
Mm.
You know, so many, I've heard so many people there, you know, those people when they're in their mid-20s, they're like, I don't want kids, I hate kids, or whatever. This is a child being thrust upon a couple like that. And
I love him digging the hole in the front yard.
That's all he's got to do.
This is such a strange
Will you be
movie.
Digging today? Yes. I'm going to go out there and dig. So it also, it harkens back to that kind of the father who, committed himself to his work. Now that you mention it, it does seem almost like an allegory about the past as well.
And about the migration to the suburbs and buying a home, a tract home.
Right.
And
what sort of a dead end that is.
Right, yeah. And so it's a great film. I wish more people would see it, but I think you have to have patience in it.
You do. It's not an entirely successful movie. I mean, it might hold your attention if you're looking at it this way. You know, if you're definitely going into it for some allegorical kicks.
Good, yes.
But as far as a horror movie, the horror is kind of, always peripheral.
Well, don't you think... Or I certainly thought after a while that this was just an extended Twilight Zone.
Yeah, right, exactly. And there's not a whole there aren't a lot of rules to what's happening. There are these intimations about what the child is, what kind of creature is, or how this operates. Why can't they escape?
Yes.
The filmmakers don't want to give you too much about that, and I think. We need a little more, just a little more information in order for that
but
to really...
But it's a great choice, and I wish more aficionados would see this.
Well, it's available to stream right now.
Yeah. All right. One, I know you're a little bit ambivalent about this film, but I was thinking more about it as allegory when I was thinking of Fight Club.
Oh, okay.
Which came out in 1999.
Well, that movie has a very passionate following.
Yeah.
People love that movie. It's never really... I know it never really resonated with me in the way that it has with a lot of people.
I think sometimes just the visual imagery is the powerful magnet there.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt, so buff.
Yeah.
And mean and the materialistic.
Yeah, the cynicism comes through.
Yeah,
there's
great word.
A deep cynicism, and it gives sort of a philosophical kind of foothold into... the consumer fetishist world that we live in, and particularly for men, men who are looking to ground themselves in their own existence with products and with, and giving themselves some sort of philosophy to break free of it.
Well,
through violence, obviously.
Yes. Are you willing to think that this film could be an allegory? I'm going to lay it on you now.
Mm.
2001.
Yeah, of course it's an allegory.
Now, as in Metropolis, science takes over.
Okay.
As materialism was taking over there.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the class struggle, but basically it was also a comment on materialism. And I thought 2001, science really dominates everything.
Go ahead.
All right. And so I just thought some people don't see it as an allegory. They just see it as a science fiction.
Right.
But it is commenting on the progression of human life.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I totally see that. And where we might go, right? So it's about opening your mind to different possibilities,
yes.
Right? And the sort of infinite mind.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah? You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational conversations about movies, hopefully always amusing as well. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production. We are your hosts, Johnny DiLoretto and John DeSando. I have one for you that is not allegorical, but only in hindsight seems allegorical.
All right. Great. I'm willing.
All the President's Men.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you why it seems allegorical, because it seems like this not so distant past in which journalistic integrity can unseat a deeply corrupt president,
yes.
A deeply corrupt leader, that's starting to seem like a fantastical idea.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example. It's very, it helps so much in understanding the parameters of allegory. With that as a historical piece,
mm-hmm.
This actually happened.
Right.
So, you're talking a historical piece. It doesn't have to be allegorical. But when you start comparing it with contemporary times,
mm-hmm.
That's when the allegory sets
doesn't it?
In.
It seems bizarre to
it's
me.
Perfect.
Now.
It's so close to history. Some people are not willing to see it allegorical.
Yeah.
But I think if you even took Primary Colors,
yeah,
you know, where it's probably all true about Clinton and his campaign and so on, allegorically, it can repeat itself,
mm-hmm.
So it becomes almost a paradigm of the way in which our culture has been corrupted in politics.
Right. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with All the President's Men, it's the true story of how Woodward and Bernstein cracked the Watergate case and brought down Nixon. The movie is directed by Alan J. Pakula. You know the outcome. It's one of those movies where you already know the outcome, right? And yet, it's terribly suspenseful. The you know, surreptitious meetings and the clandestine kind of skullduggery that's going on, and them it's really tense. Like you feel like at any moment they're going to be killed or something like that, you know. But
add to that,
yeah,
the glitter of the male actors.
Oh yeah, Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford.
Oh my,
crackerjack chemistry with these guys.
Oh,
it is a really beautifully made film, and you know, and it's sad. To me, it's sad and frightening that we have to look upon it now as this fantastical thing that it feels like it could not happen.
Yep,
you know that. That the subject of an investigation like that would just cry fake news or lies and just continue to barrel on their merry way.
Do you think this is political? Do you think this is a political allegory? I do, because I'm offering it to you. Another 1999, what do you know, film, The Sixth Sense.
Oh, that is interesting. I wouldn't have.
I know, and I
one.
Wouldn't either, except I saw a suggestion on this, and I thought, yeah.
So, I guess what I'm going to ask you, an allegory in as much as we are dead and moving through our lives,
yes.
In a state of...
And we are dominated by surveillance,
mm-hmm.
And we are being watched.
Okay.
And we might, and very appropriately, you've brought in, we are dead.
Yeah.
So, you are scaling back, you're peeling back into the inside, the meaning inside, an otherwise fantastical film. All right. When we see the twist at the end, we say, oh, this is great. We tell everybody and so on. But it is making a comment on the way we live.
You know, that's great. I haven't seen that movie for years, but I would say, you know, and I was never really impressed with it. And certainly it loses a lot of its allure once you've seen it all the way through and the twist is revealed.
Once you get to the twist.
However, when you look at it this way, when you look at it as an allegory, as a metaphor for moving through your life and not seeing the obvious or not seeing what's right in front of you, right, which can shed so much truth on your own existence.
Yes.
Maybe then it takes on a more interesting kind of power.
And that is the power of allegory. It can just shoot off like a cannon and spraying all over the place with meaning. Now, I have one that came out recently that could be considered political allegory, but certainly is allegorical. The Platform.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, I know. As we go back to Metropolis.
Right. The Platform. That's a Spanish film or a
Mexican
film?
Yes, that's exactly.
Spanish speaking, anyway. Yeah. About the prison, right?
Yes.
And so there's yeah, it's weird, right? Because it seems like a prison that you voluntarily go into.
Well, this guy, this one, our protagonist does. Yeah,
he does.
Others are sent there.
Right.
So we you could volunteer to
go to this place. You volunteer there, you end up there.
Right.
And then once you're there, you are in this prison, like a tower, and a platform comes down on every level. And it starts at the top with a huge, beautiful spread of delectable food items. And then as it goes, everybody gets about a minute or two to eat, right? So by the time the platform gets to the lowest level, there's nothing there.
Right. It's nothing but bestiality at the bottom. And so you have your upper class up there, just as you had in Metropolis. And you have them enjoying the fruits of their wealth.
And this is, you know, I love this movie, and I love this. It's such, it's a violent, disturbing movie. But what I love about it is it's, the premise is so beautifully simple, right? And it's basically saying this: if you have all of this, if this is what you can't possibly eat all of it, right? So the people at the top cannot possibly eat all of that food.
I know.
Right? If everybody would just learn to take enough.
Yes.
If you could just eat a couple of bites of something and let the food and let other people have a piece of the cake.
Listen, I remember your coming out with this analysis when we started the pandemic and people were buying toilet paper.
Right.
And you were saying, see, this is when we and we
saw
a perfect platform.
I couldn't have come out at a better moment.
I know.
You know, I still get it. When you try to order paper towels, it's a daunting task. That movie, that's a great one to end on, John, because it's so clear and concise a concept, right? That you can't possibly indulge. You can indulge, but if you do, you're ruining other people's ability to live, you know? And that, I think, is probably the greatest lesson.
Double Take is produced.
Yeah.
By whom?
It's produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto, and it's a Cinema Classics production.
And where can they hear this?
You can hear it at wcbe.org on the podcast experience
page.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Or until next time.
Mm-hmm.